This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Alrighty, folks, before we dive into this episode, we've got to give a shout out to our amazing sponsor, Peak Productions.
Nothing like the sound of crisp quality. And speaking of quality, Peak Productions deliver top-notch videography to elevate your business social media game.
Absolutely. They create videos that not only look fantastic, but also drive real engagement from promos to storytelling. Peak Productions has the magic touch.
So, if you want to stand out online, hit up Peak Productions. Trust us, you'll love it, the results, just as much as I love this beer.
Yeah, check them out at www.peakproductions.com.au or check out their socials and let them take your brand to the next level.
I want to thank me. I want to thank me for believing in me. I want to thank me for doing all this hard work. I want to thank me for having no days off. I want to thank me for never quitting. I want to thank me for always being a giver and trying to give more than I receive. I want to thank me for trying to do more right than wrong. I want to thank me for just being me at all times. Snoop Dogg, you a bad motherfucker, girl.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Lads Podcast. I'm Barney. To my left, I've got Stiffy.
How are you, mate? Fucking good, man. Sunday afternoon. Fucking good, 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 good.
Sunday session, eh?
Yeah, I can't wait to crack some tins today. It's hot as fuck. It's 30 degrees on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I thought it was actually pretty good. You've been saying it's hot. Oh, that's good.
What, have you been in air conditioning all day?
No.
Anyway, let's shut up because we've got someone else on.
We have a guest. We've got it.
This is a guest episode. So I want everyone, welcome Jay.
Thank you.
Welcome to today's episode of Lads Podcast. Lads Podcast stands for Lifestyle Adventure Daily Stories.
Yep, it does.
And Jay has got a fucking good couple of yarns. And I reckon before we get into anything, of course, I normally jump the gun. What do we do first, Braz?
We're going to have a beer. Because it's Sunday afternoon, have a beer, yeah?
Fucking oath.
You have a beer, Jay?
So just, I don't drink.
Yeah.
You don't drink at all.
But it's a special day today, and thanks for having me. So I will crack one with you.
And then I'll drink it.
No. if I'm dancing on the table by the end of the
day. No, you won't be.
No way.
All right, so let's crack.
Right,
what are we drinking today?
Open up the fridge.
Oh, well, sorry. You've got me here. There you go. What about it? What is this out of the fridge?
Mate.
Holgate.
Pale ale.
Yeah, Mount where?
Mount something.
Maystone. How do you say that? All right, so it is a 4.5%, so hang on to your fucking hats. And there's 1.3 standard drinks.
So what we do, Jay, we actually have a little bit of a crack off. So Stiffy's just going to crack it and we'll get into it. So.
Yeah, there's a bit of spiel there, but fuck it.
Get into it, read it.
No, well, it says it's clean, cool air and refreshing cool waters make it the perfect break from the day. From the daily grind. It's no wonder they named it after our beer. This Australian pale ale is a popular favourite with zesty, citrus and fruity New World hopes. Hopes?
New World hopes. Hops. Maybe hops.
Isn't hops double O?
No.
It's not, New World hops.
Right
out. So I'll crack first. Here we go. It's a fucking good crack. Yeah, but. Oh, that's the... Slowest crack. That was fucked. Jay's just going to rip the top off it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jay wins.
I think this can definitely deserves to be just ripped off.
Oh, this is good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's cold.
That's nice.
And it's pale.
Mm, very beer tasty.
It's very zesty, like it says. Mm. Anyway, that's enough about beer. Let's just drink it. And
Right, yeah. So welcome, Jay. Thank you. I suppose the first thing we need to do is talk about your occupation.
Yeah, fucking oath, because this is exciting.
Yes.
What do you do?
So whenever someone asks me, hey, Jay, so what do? My first answer is as little as possible.
As we all do, yeah.
And that is the standard answer I get. And then I go, okay, actually, I fly hot air balloons for a living.
Yes.
So it is pretty unique. It's different. And
How long you been doing it for?
So April 23rd this year, 28 years.
28 years.
28 years, yeah. It's been
28 years as a pilot.
Yep.
Wow.
It's been an amazing journey. More than half my life.
Yep.
I'm pushing 51 this year.
Yep.
So
you don't look 51 if I say so.
No, it's very fit and he's very athletic, definitely. So yeah, hot air balloon pilot. This, you know, hot air balloons, that's why I wanted to get you on, because I want to know all about hot air ballooning and how did you get into hot air ballooning to start with?
It found me. I'm an adventurer at heart.
Yep.
So when I was a young boy, all I ever wanted to do was be a game ranger, believe it or not.
Yep.
And then one day I came back from overseas, back to South Africa, and I'd been traveling for a few years. And I remember walking up the stairs at my mom's place and there was a newspaper sitting there. And I never read the newspaper.
Just get that microphone closer, buddy.
How's that?
Yeah, it's better. That's anyway, it.
And I saw this little ad. Are you an early riser? Are you an adventurer? How do you like to chase hot air balloons? I'm like, that's me. Phoned the guy. I was an hour early for my interview.
Yeah.
And I got on so well with the guy. He's just one of the most beautiful human beings. And he said, look, you're young, enthusiastic. We'll start you out as a ground crew, see what it's like, you know. Quite a bit of physical work. One day you could be a pilot.
Yep.
And yeah, that was years ago. And I haven't looked back since. It's just been an amazing, amazing journey since then. So and back in 1997.
Where were you in 1997?
In Johannesburg.
In Johannesburg? In
Johannesburg.
Yep.
Yeah, the Wild West.
Yeah. So paint the scene of that. Like, as in, you're talking about hot air ballooning out in Johannesburg. Is that's geographically, what does that look like?
So it was just outside of Johannesburg, northwest, sort of out on the, if you can compare it to Brisbane hinterland, beautiful mountains, big properties. Oh, yep. It's just beautiful out there, you know, natural flowing rivers, perennial rivers. And that's, yeah, so part of the job was he gave me this little cottage on a big farm. There's lots of little cottages tucked away everywhere, and that's where the hangar was with the ballooning.
Yep.
And we used to launch from the actual farm or down the road at, it was like a small game farm. We used to launch there. And that's where I started my training. So for the first year, I didn't touch a burner. I was on the ground crewing, getting to know what it's like to be on the ground, getting to know ballooning in and out from that perspective.
Yep.
And then one day I said, you're ready, you're young, you're humbled, you're ready to, you know, to take it to the next
level. Yeah, right.
And then, yeah, he gave me a small balloon and said, off you go, do your hours. And the training is very similar to a fixed wing or helicopter.
So small balloon, you're talking like a...
I'm talking a two-man balloon.
Yeah,
like
right.
Like a tiny basket,
just,
you know, maybe two tanks and that's it.
Yep.
And I did my training, did my standard, I think it was 12 or 16 hours.
Yep.
And then from there you go into the next, the bigger balloon. So it's the same as fixed wing or helicopter where you go like class one up to like a class four, different ratings, you know.
Yep.
And in ballooning here in Australia, it's up to a class, used to be class five now, they've changed it slightly. But it's like single turbine, multi-turbine or piston, multi-piston, same thing. You've got to go through all those levels.
Yep.
However, in ballooning, it takes so much longer. You're looking at about 7.5 years full time before you can fly one of those big balloons that I fly now.
Yeah, right.
Wow. So not because it's that difficult. It just takes a long time. It's 1 hour a day if the weather's good. So you can imagine to log on 100 hours,
yeah,
it could take you a year.
Yeah.
So unless you're actually working in the industry, getting your hours up,
yep, it's very, near impossible.
Very difficult. So I'm sitting at, I've done 5,500 flights. That could take someone 55 years to do.
Yep.
You know, I'm very lucky that I'm sitting at, you know, close to 4,000 hours. But whether you're flying a small balloon or a big balloon, the feeling is the same, just being out there and always know where you're going to start, not quite sure where you're going to finish.
That's
yeah,
one of my main things. Like, I've been up in a balloon before and sort of watched them drop the foam down to see where the air's going, like below you and stuff like that. Very interesting. But you're going, you're at the mercy. It'd be like me jumping on a sailboat. I'd end in New Zealand because I wouldn't know how to turn the thing around.
Not quite like a sailboat. Sailboat, two-dimensional. You're on the water. You can do left and right.
Yep.
Ballooning, four-dimensional. left, right, up and down. You can't do, you really got to work those winds. Even while flying this morning, I flew this morning and a passenger asked, "So Jay, do you know where we're going to be landing?" And I said, "Absolutely, 100%. She says, "Where?" I said, "On the ground."
On the ground.
I said, "Destination unknown at the moment." But for me, I get to the shed really early. I check out all the different weather models and I go, okay, in my brain I'm going, okay, the winds are going from here to there. The prevailing winds are 2,500 feet, are 100 degrees, 7, 8 knots or 15 knots. If I take off from there, I should get there.
Mm.
Wherever I'm going, what are my options? If I miss plan A, I got plan B, plan C. Mm. So today, I landed at plan A. But yep. I already thought about it 10 minutes into
this podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The Real Real. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
My flight and went, okay, if I climb up to 2,000 feet, I'm going to get into that 070, go up and drop down over the Logan and then run the lower winds, which is a 90 degree difference to what I had, you know, higher up. And yeah, I landed from launch site to launch site. I nailed
it. Nailed it.
Yeah, it's a good feeling when you're flying and you're going, okay, if I can make it there, that'll be good. And you're using those little winds, a little wind going there and a little wind going there. And I call it feathering a balloon.
Can you see the winds, like
sometimes
with the reactions of clouds or?
On the surface, I can certainly see if there's wind coming from the south to the north. So little sounds like maybe a bit of smoke or ripples on water.
Yep.
Or if I'm dropping down, I can see the tops of the trees are thrashing. I'm going, okay, it's windy down there. But most of the time I'll get my ground crew to go to a certain area and say, hey, just check the winds for me. So he'll let a little helium balloon go. He'll put a compass reading on it and go, okay, Jay, on the surface, go 030, 5 to 7 knots. And I'm going, awesome. Okay, I'm currently traveling 2708 knots. If I drop down over there, run into that wind that he's given me, I should be able to get there. And then always keep plan B or C and D in mind. Because if you miss it, which is easy to do, then you got to have a backup plan. Because you got to remember, I've got 24 people's lives on board.
Yep. Yeah, it's a big basket.
There's no room for error.
So what weight? Okay, so what weight are you running?
So the forward momentum of a big balloon like the one I flew this morning, you're looking at about 17 tons of forward momentum, not actual weight.
No, inertia, as like inertia. A ship
and a train.
Wow.
The all-up weight this morning was just under 2 tons. That's 20 people with me, 21.
Yep.
And then the envelope weight, which is the balloon, and then the basket and all the fuel. So it's 10 and a half stories high. It dwarfs a 737. It's a big thing.
Yeah, they are big.
Oh, they are big, yeah.
Yeah. From a distance, they don't look that big, but they are massive.
And when you get closer, then you realize, damn, that thing's massive. I mean, we've got one of the biggest in Australia, which is, they call it a 525. I call it our Airbus A380 on steroids.
Yeah.
And when I inflate this thing, I still go, all right, she's a big girl.
Yeah. So do you talk about volume of balloons?
Yes.
Yeah.
So volume you talk about in cubic feet.
Yep.
So basically think of a basketball.
Yeah.
So the one I flew this morning, 450,000 cubic feet, which is a lot. That's 450,000 basketballs, you know. As I said, about 10 and a half. Oh, no, that's actually 12 stories almost. And then you got the bigger one, which is not really taller, but just She's a big girl.
She's got big hips.
She a big girl.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more to it. You know, so many people go, wow, there's so much more to it. You know, and why do you have to burn? And why are you burning while coming down? And I go, well, if I don't burn, we'll be part of the scenery very quickly.
Yeah.
The balloon's cooling down the whole time, so I've got to replace the cooling of the air. I've got to burn to replace that.
Yeah.
And if I'm coming down and not replacing it, then It's a problem.
Yeah. And with your experience, do you feel that instantly, like just through your feet, through your hands, through your...
So people go, how do you know when to burn? And I go, you know what? For me, it's a gut feeling.
You feel it.
Yep. It's for me, it's like like riding a motorbike. You just know when to change. Same with you, Bonzi. Yeah. You know when to change gears. You just got that feeling.
Yeah.
Within the first 30 seconds of launching, I can tell you exactly how I'm going to be flying, whether she's heavy, what the conditions are. And it's just a gut feeling,
yep.
You know. And it takes many years to get that level flying, perfect level flying.
Yeah.
And junior pilots, especially balloon pilots, it's so funny. You watch them. What too much? What too little? What too much?
Yeah.
They fly like yo-yos.
So yeah. And the seasonal changes too. You're like atmospheric conditions, temperatures.
Big time.
Summer, winter.
Absolutely.
Daylight.
So humidity. Ambient temperature, which is the outside temperature.
Yeah.
The type of balloon you're flying. The size, so and the age of the balloon.
Yeah.
So for me, it doesn't matter whether I fly a little balloon, which is like a private balloon where a couple and the pilot fly, or the very big one with 24 big Aussies on board.
Yeah.
I just react or respond accordingly to the conditions.
Yeah.
So I adapt to those conditions.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like riding a bike. I literally get in and I just sometimes I actually wonder, how did I get here? Have you ever done that driving back from work?
I have.
Shit, you know what? I actually don't remember getting... How did I get home? Gee, that was quick.
Yeah.
I fly a balloon like that. It's just... I was meant to fly balloons. It was my calling. And for me, what I love about ballooning is sharing that experience with people.
Yeah.
When I got people coming up to me going, man, that was amazing. It was a bucket list thing. Or I never thought I was so frightened of heights. And that was great. And just to see that to me is soul food.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, people sometimes 100%. Say... Do you ever go in a little balloon on your own just for a joyride? I'm like, nah.
Just can't share it.
I want an experience shared, and you can attest to this. An experience shared is so much better, especially like when you're riding bikes with your mates.
Yeah,
sometimes you want to go out on your own. That's what I take my motorbike for. But sharing it with other people, it's just so special, man. It really is.
It must be with like when you've got 23, 24 other people on board, the experience then just to see their reaction, like, especially if they haven't done it before.
Well, that's a funny thing. You know, I used to think that if people are quiet in the basket, it took me a while to work this out. I'd be flying and everyone's so quiet. And I think, okay, are they bored? You know, and then I'd start talking more. And then eventually I realized, hang on, I thought, let me just watch people a bit more. And you can see them, they're going. And I can see they're just taking it in. And they're going, there's no noise up here besides the burner. And it's so peaceful.
Mm.
And then I thought to myself, Jay, shut up a little bit. I know you like a good yarn, but just let them have a moment. Let them have a moment. Yep. And that's why I always say, folks, I'm here for you. If you have any questions, just ask. That's what I'm here for. And, I've had some people just tears in their eyes.
Yeah.
Bucket list, Make-A-Wish Foundation. I've had a lot of terminally ill kids that have come.
Yeah.
It's a special thing, ballooning. Mm.
It would be. Even like run us through your day to day. So, I mean, like, because you're like a weatherman at the same time. Like meteorology is got to be something that's going on because you're open to the elements. But just run us through your, I guess, a typical day.
So typical day is going to bed early.
Yeah.
Going to bed early for me is latest 10 p.m. As long as I get 4.5 hours at night, because I always catch it up during the day. So I had a good sleep this afternoon, 3 hours.
Yep.
So I've got a good balance. I get up an hour before I have to be at the shed, even though I only live 3 kilometers and I cycle to work.
Yep.
Good to keep fit.
Yep.
Because I spend 20 minutes meditating in the moment. So by the time I get to the shed, I'm like totally zenned out, ready, doesn't matter what comes my way. And that's when I sit down and I just check the logbooks. We've got a checklist and I look at my different models. I got about 7-8 different models from the Bureau of Meteorology, the different winds, is there rain coming? You know, there's so many different factors. And then I go check my equipment. I go make sure it's all filled up, everything's 100%, and then we go out and we...
So that part of the morning, is that when you also go, okay, today's not a good day for flying? Do you make those decisions then?
I usually check the day before.
Yeah,
many you sort days of give in advance. I'm always looking at the weather, always. Yep. I get mates on motorbikes phoning me. There was a guy doing a ride saying, Jay, can you check the weather for me for Tenterfield?
Yeah.
Because I got all these paid apps, you know, and I do, mate, you should be okay. You might get a bit of rain on the Thursday by lunchtime, maybe a thunderstorm, but you should be all right.
Yeah.
But it becomes part of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, I watch the weather all the time. And even when I'm driving somewhere where I've never been, I'll look out and I go, man, it'd be cool to launch there. Or could you imagine flying a balloon?
Yeah.
It changes your life.
Yeah.
It changes your life. Yeah. So, yeah, weather is so important, and taking off nice and early, because if things change, and they do, we have a thing in ballooning is that there's always a guarantee that the wind will change. You know, two guarantees. One is you will land.
Yep.
All right. And two is that the wind will change.
Obviously, as the sun comes up, that's when the weather changes, because temperatures change.
Not always. It depends on the time of year. You were saying earlier about the season. So winter time, we get that cold layer of air called an inversion, which gets crispy. You know, people think, oh, are we going to get cold up there? I'm going, no, winter time, we're going to get warm up there. Once we climb up over into that cold, over above that cold inversion layer, which can be 0 degrees here in Bowie's,
yep,
gets crispy out here.
Yeah.
And you're getting up into 7, 8, 10 degrees warmer.
How high? And is that like 1,000 feet or?
That depends on how cold it is. For instance, this morning, a very shallow one, summertime.
Yep.
It was maybe only 200 feet.
And then it started warming up. You can feel it.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot to it, you know.
And yeah.
So much. And do you have, how much instrumentation do you have on board?
So when I first started flying, I literally had a box with dials, like old variometer, like, you know. But nowadays I've got, the only thing I have to fly with from a legal standpoint is a set of instruments which show my altitude above ground, above sea level.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Rate of climb, rate of descent, my Q&H, things like that. But I've got a big iPad, so I can see all the land we're allowed to land on, not allowed to land on. I've got a GPS. The iPad is an excellent tool because we've got an overlay of the power lines.
We're the only companies
in the world that has this data, which we got straight from the power company. When we first approached them, it was like, hey, can we get your data? And they're like, yeah, no.
Yep.
It's like, no, it's for us for ballooning. So we can see the power lines in the air down there. Because from up there,
you can't see it.
You know, and I always say, it's a shocking experience hitting those.
Literally.
There's one.
Yeah. Oh, man. There's a dad joke.
It really does help with, you know. I mean, it doesn't absolve the duty of a pilot to look. But I've been close. Touch wood. I've never hit a power line.
Yep.
You know, I've always been very astute. And I was taught early on, lines bite.
Mm-hmm.
Just the furry ones. But power lines bite. Most balloon accidents around the world, especially in Albuquerque, where they have that balloon festival, you have like 500 balloon power lines. They might be always, every year, there's someone dying, hitting power lines, getting electrocuted, and it's ugly. Yep. And helicopter pilots don't like those things either.
No.
Crop sprayers, same thing. So yeah, instrumentation's come a long way. But the nice thing is, if I lose any of that while flying, I just go back to my roots, poof, I just feel it.
Yeah.
And that's the way you've really got to sort of learn that way, because if that does go down, you're not going to be able to fly it.
Technology is a tool, but it's not the whole gist of it. So,
that's why I reckon cars these days, like sort of kids learning to drive in a car these days, you've got all this bloody instrumentation that's sort of going on.
Yep.
If they lose all that or jump in an old car, they're screwed, aren't they?
Also, when they're not taught to use the technology in a car, I'm getting this off subject, but I know Paul, it's V8 supercar driver, Morris. He does the driving car school and teaches you how to use the ABS properly. And when you get into spin and how the car can relate to you. So, yeah, he does a fantastic job of that, but it's totally different technology.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, like anything, if you have too much tech, it's analysis paralysis. It's like if you got too much going on, you know. Like for me, riding bikes, no ABS, no traction control, none of that. Now I got a 701 that's got so many things, and I'm really loving it because, you know, traction one, I can still get good slide and you can still wheelie and whatever else, but it's,
you're not going to hit yourself. So your day-to-day, you get to the warehouse, the shed, and you're checking out your winds, getting that, you know, getting the feel of what it looks like. Do you still do the balloon up the helium thing?
Absolutely.
And does that change location, or do you have a favourite spot to go to?
So we always, in the morning, you usually go to Bromelton Corner.
Yeah, so out
there's that flag there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's nice and central to the valley. And we let a balloon go and we watch it. And then it climbs at about 300 feet a minute. So I can put a timer on it. I go, okay, it's climbing. Like this morning, perfect example. On the surface, 020 up to about 15,000 feet and then hard left. So because we had the stronger wind, I thought, let me go to Laravel down the road.
Yep.
Let another balloon go just to make sure it's the correct place.
Yep.
And then, yeah, made it happen. I send a pin on WhatsApp for the driver because he brings all the passengers in from Canungra.
Oh, yeah.
They pick up from the coast,
yep.
Gold Coast, or self-drive to Canungra.
Yep.
And then they come and, he arrives and we load the passengers.
Mm.
So that's the glory part of my day. So I'm also chief pilot for the operation. Which sounds all glorious, but it just means I'm responsible for everybody.
Everything, yeah.
And everybody. I'm also an aircraft engineer.
Yep.
I'm also a CASA flight instructor. Anything and everything to do with ballooning, I've got the qualification in Australia. I'm also on the board for writing the new regs with the Civil Aviation Safety Authority. I just love anything and everything to do with ballooning.
Yeah, I can definitely tell you're passionate about it. So
love
it's, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm all about safety. Like hot air, pre-COVID, we were the biggest balloon operator in the Southern Hemisphere. We're flying 50,000 people a year. That's a lot. That's more than any other general aviation commercial operator in Australia, including fixed wing helicopter. You know, it's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then COVID came and it said, hey, how's it going? And down to one pilot, which was me.
Yeah. Yep.
And then since then we've recovered and we've changed the way we operate. We're no longer the biggest. We're now a boutique operator. And our motto now is bigger is not better.
Yeah.
Better is better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah. Quality over quantity.
100%. And we've still got the operation up in Cairns. So I flew up in Cairns for 11 years before coming down here.
Oh, you would have seen so many beautiful places. Obviously, that's where balloons go because it's about the scenery and stuff. And so
100%. I've seen some amazing things. And the other lovely thing about ballooning is that no 2 days are ever the same.
Mm.
So you may have 2 or 3 days where you've launched and landed in the same area, but how you get there is totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different. And even when I do check flights, I do currency check flights for pilots. I'm thinking while flying, geez, I don't go into that wind. It's how you get there. It's totally different. So you can have 4 pilots on board and each one of us would have flown different. Whereas with a fixed wing, you know, you got to come, you know, approach 270, you know, you got to do all that stuff and it's all pretty much the same with slight variances. But with a balloon, man, oh man, there's so many different things you can do.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. Like, it's just cool.
Oh, yeah. There's so many questions I got. One of them is like, so you set up. So as soon as the ground crew goes out there, how long does it take to get that balloon before you chuck the people in there?
So from the time we drop the basket, just the two of us setting up this big balloon, I'll have it standing up in 35 minutes, standing up ready to go. If I have to do it quickly, take my time, 45 minutes. Pre-flight checks on a balloon take longer than any other aircraft. I've flown with fixed wing and helicopter, you know, you're walking around, checking this, checking that, doing a bit of, you know, fuel bleeding, this and that. But with a balloon, I've got to go inside. There's just a massive complex network of ropes and pulleys in there, like a lot. I've got 5 ropes that are in the basket with me.
Yep.
None of them help me go left or right.
Yep.
But they all have a function.
Yep.
And they're all inside the balloon with all these pulleys and everything. So I've got to make sure nothing is twisted. Then I put a bit of air, let it breathe, and then... Yeah,
right.
I'd love to take you guys.
Okay, yeah.
100%. I want to go.
Yeah.
Tell us how do you steer it?
So you can't steer it. However, you can control up and down. And that's how you use the different winds at different heights, like I explained earlier. So on the surface this morning when I took off, just went above the trees and I was tracking 030, which is north, northeast. And then as soon as I climbed up to 1,500 feet, I got a big left turn. And you can actually feel it. And I say to my folks, okay, we're now going to make a descent. We're going to drop it about 500 feet a minute. You might feel a little bit of pressure on your ears. It's quite normal. You feel it in any aircraft.
Mm.
And then you're going to feel a bit of wind on your face. It's not actually wind. It's us coming down into the cool, calm air because the balloon is being pushed by the 20 knots, but the basket is getting dragged through that air. So you can feel that breeze, which in middle of winter when it's zero, damn, you know, you're
around.
It's like, whoa. And everyone's like, hit that burner. Damn, it's cold. I love it. I love the cold. I love winter.
So the favorable season between winter and summer, flying the balloon, winter is it more favorable for you as an experience?
It's different.
Different smells, different sights, different.
Absolutely. Yep. And it's definitely warmer in summer, but we then we load our balloons a lot lighter. So we don't have as many passengers. We've got to have that buffer, you know.
Yeah.
Everything is pre-worked out. We've got average weights. You've got to have so much fuel on board, so many passengers, and there's a lot more to it.
Yeah. But a winter, Now, I don't know if this is right or not, but a winter's morning compared to a summer's morning, I'm just imagining most, you know, you're going up to watch the sunrise, aren't you? And the landscape and whatnot.
Of course.
The sunrise in winter, is it a longer sunrise or a shorter sunrise? As in that moment of, wow, it is...
It's different every time, and it doesn't matter whether it's winter or summer. It depends on how many clouds there are.
Yeah, that's, yeah, so many different elements.
Is there a high pressure or a low pressure sitting over us? Mm. You know, how clear is... There's days where I can see Gold Coast clearly. You can only see it from 3,000 feet, but Brisbane we can see often. And certain days, it is crystal clear.
Yeah.
Like, I've done a flight from Carolbin airstrip a few times. If the wind's really strong out of the southwest, we launch there, which is a long flight. And as you're taking off, and it's crystal clear, and you see the border ranges, and yep. you can see all the crevices, and yeah. it's phenomenal.
Yeah. So, everyone, all your listeners out there, actually, we're based in the scenic rim. Just to give them a geographical idea yes. of how you mentioned Gold Coast and Brisbane. So, we are, you know, an hour west of Gold Coast. We're an hour south of Brisbane. Scenic Rim is where we're at, and Bow Desert's the sort of hub central of the operation, and you fly out from there. But that's, yeah, just wanted to give the listeners a bit of a geographical pin of where we're talking about, yep. the Scenic Rim.
And being Bow Desert, it makes it sound really dry, but it's actually named after another town in England called Bow Desert, which yep. is after a French name, and it's got nothing to do with the desert.
I've yep. actually learned something
today. There you go.
I've actually learned a lot of things today. So how much I will retain is not bad. But yeah, I did not know that. So I've learned something.
Yeah. Yeah, so ballooning is just, I mean, you live for it. It's your passion. You love it. And it started off in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
In South Africa. Right. So, that's right.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Go back to Johannesburg, because like you were this is a game where you used to fly the balloons from, was a game farm. Is that what you said?
So I spent about 97, about 2 years on that farm. It wasn't a game farm. It was just a beautiful property out in the mountains. And then they offered for me to be operations manager of the balloon company, which they owned, that flew over the second biggest national game park in South Africa.
Okay, so for anyone that doesn't know game park, what's a game park actually?
Game park in South African terms means animal, safari.
Yep.
So this particular one is the second largest. It's called the Pilansberg National Game Park. It's the place called Sun City. There's a big resort right on the edge of it. It's a volcanic crater. So big round, 55,000 hectares, big place. It's got the big five. So rhino, leopard, lion, you know, all the dangerous animals.
Yeah.
When they said, how do you and your... Well, she was my wife at that stage.
Yeah.
How'd you like to go and run the operation? I'm like, absolutely. Under one condition, I learned to fly big balloons while I'm there, because yep. I wasn't commercially rated yet. I was still yep. just private flying. And they said, absolutely. So we lived there for 6 years. And I flew over the Pilansberg for 6 years. Yeah. And I have seen everything from yep. the air. I've seen lions hunt. I've seen crocodile and lions have a tug of war on the edge of the water for a kill. I've seen hippo give birth. Mm. I've flown low over trees where all of a sudden you see a leopard. I've seen it.
Yep.
Just
phenomenal.
An amazing experience. I've had a few, oh my God, situations flying in the game park.
Yeah.
Actually, my whole career, all different times, I've had lots of. I always say.
So the ground crew are out there running around these animals too.
Yeah, but they're in vehicles, you know. They're in vehicles. We're kind of going into, we're going into territory where you might not be able to get a vehicle. Now we're stuck on top of a mountain. There could be lions there. It could be whatever, you know.
True.
But I always say that I have this motto, and I say this to all pilots too, actually even to my kids, my girls. You don't become a good sailor in calm seas. Mm. You need to experience these things to make you stronger, better, as long as you learn from them, and then you remain humble, you know. So, I've had some interesting stories.
Yeah.
That is a good analogy. Like, it's the whole thing of life too. Like, when you learn things when at the worst, so don't you?
Yeah.
Have you had any moments that you want to share?
Oh, okay. So, funny enough, when you said, early on, while I was saying I've had some interesting ones, there was one which I haven't told you yet.
Yeah.
But we used to take off right next to a big lake, and there's hippos and crocs and things in there. And so this particular day, I think I only had like six people on board. So I took off, going low. You watch the hippos pop out of the water. It's just beautiful. Get to the middle of the lake, and the wind stopped. Literally dead, nothing. Oh. I went up 8,500 feet, okay? The game park looked like a tiny little dish. And I went back down 45 minutes later. I'm in exactly the same spot in the middle of the dam. There's crocs and stuff in there. And I'm quietly myself.
Yep.
And then a little wind just took me back to the launch site.
Oh, you're
and
kidding.
I was like, that's when you know this was meant to be.
Wow. Well,
can't land here.
Can't park there, man. Yeah. Can't park there. But the scariest thing that's happened to me to date, not only as a balloon pilot, but as a human being, and growing up in South Africa, I can tell you some stories afterwards too, but is we were setting up this one morning, same balloon, the one that I got stuck on. We're setting up early in the morning. I'm a qualified game ranger now, so my boy, my childhood dream, I'd made that a reality.
Yep.
I did all my game ranging courses. So not only could I do guarding from the air, tell them, okay, that's this animal, that antelope, that bird, but now I'm also flying balloons, so double whammy.
Yep.
You know, this particular morning we're setting up, and the sun's not quite up yet. It's just getting a little bit of light. And I'm working at the top of the balloon. Now, it's a long distance, about, you know, a good 40-odd yards at the top of the balloon. And we're putting the parachute in, which is like a plug at the top of the balloon.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, I hear, woof, woof, and I'm like, oh, my heart just sank because I knew exactly what that sound was. It was a lion. Now, the rule of thumb is keep eye contact, walk back slowly. You know?
Yeah.
Not a sausage. Like, for some reason...
Not a sausage.
For some reason, my gut said, run.
Run.
And I had Daniel, my ground crew, with me, and I just ran.
Oh.
And I remember it all of a sudden went...
Did you trip him over?
Funny thing is, I'm running, and I'm thinking... It was like slow motion, and I'm going, I can't die. It was on my 30th birthday. I never figured... I'm running, going, I can't die today. I've got kids at home.
Yeah.
And Daniel is behind me, grabbing my jacket, trying to get past me. But while we're running... And I'm thinking this, I'm shouting, lion, lion, because I've got two of my crew still at the basket.
Yeah.
So as I'm running flat out, now I'm pretty fast runner.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm a fast runner. As I get to the ute, Daniel jumps into the back. It's got high. So he just, like a skydiver, just straight in the back. I open the passenger door. I jump in. As I jump in and slam the door, bang, her head's right here.
Oh, no.
Dude,
ways.
Let me tell you. My heart was just in my throat, and I was just, yeah. And she's basically doing this to the window, and those eyes are piercing and growling.
Oh,
and
no.
Not a word of a lie. Had I been 2 seconds slower.
Yeah, yeah, gone.
Gone. Absolutely gone. So two females arrived and another big male, and they just surrounded us for ages, and eventually they started tearing the ground sheet and playing with ropes and just...
Oh.
We eventually managed to push the lions away. I undid the rope. We started etching them away, and they left. And I still did the flight. But I had nightmares after that, you know.
Oh.
It bugged. Like, I got to a launch site after that, I was like, big torches. I started flying with a rifle. So, obviously, I used to shoot once a week to keep current.
Yep.
I carried a 38 on my hip, and I carried a 4.58 in the basket with me. That's a big caliber rifle because that'll stop an Ellie.
Yeah, you know? Dinosaurs.
Yeah, dinosaurs. Yeah. So I flew with a lot of ammunition just in case.
Just for that moment of...
And I had nightmares. I'm sure I had PTSD after that. And
oh, you fucking would. Fucking hell.
And there's no... So I was part of the Parks Board. I was what they called an honorary officer. So I did a lot of work with Parks Board and animal counting and, you know, all about conservation. And I had a meeting with them. I said, guys, we've got, you know, these lions. I said, oh... It's a brand new pride, just been introduced, because they've got to change the bloodline. And they were starving, hadn't eaten.
Yeah.
Never seen a balloon. And they're like, oh, what's this big bubble? Oh, what are those people? Oh, I'm hungry. Let me go
chase him. Why is he running? Let's chase him.
Oh, dude, you know, there's a statistic. People coming in from Northern Africa down into South Africa, they got to go through some real wild country. And still to date, up to 2,000 people per annum get eaten by lions. It's
2,000.
A lot. There's so much that goes on in Africa. Africa gets no publicity because it's Africa.
Yep.
A lot of people get eaten by lions still.
Yeah, it's just...
That is nuts.
Yep.
My wife actually asked me this weekend. She said, would you go to Africa and do a horse trail with us? I said, no.
Yes, I've done it.
Yep.
And it's awesome because you get really close to the animals.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. They don't see you as an individual person. They see the horse... with a big funny shape on the back. Actually, they don't even see the shape.
They don't see that. They just think it's the horse.
And you can get really close to antelope. Giraffe, no. You get close to it. The horse doesn't matter. You can kick it. It can be your favorite. It will not go close to a giraffe.
It will not.
It's the funniest thing. Yeah. It's just they just stand back, won't go closer to a giraffe.
And hippos. Hippos are more dangerous than lions, aren't they?
So hippos are responsible for more deaths than any other wild animal in Africa. And they are 100% herbivores.
Yep.
So they eat grass. Why do people get eaten by them? Is during the night, they go and graze. They'll go up to 40, 50 kilometers, or can travel really far to get good grazing. Early morning, they want to get back to their water. They're on these little trails. Local people are there with their buckets going down to the river to get water. Anything standing between a territorial bull and his females or his water,
it's gone. Yeah.
Most bodies that are found from hippo deaths are literally bitten in half. So they've got 80 centimeter canines, of which, you know, 35 to 40 centimeters in the jaw. And when those incisors come together, they're sharpening all the time. And have you seen a hippo run? Dude, you will not outrun a hippo.
No.
Those things are fast.
Are fast as.
Yeah.
I've never been chased by a hippo. I've been chased by a lion. I've been chased by an elephant. Yeah.
Yeah. That's enough. That's too many things for me there.
I'm not going to Africa.
No. I tell you what, I say to everybody, it's a beautiful, wonderful place to go visit. And I do suggest everyone goes because it's just, it's amazing. However, it's not a place to raise a family. But to go see the safari and see the countryside, and the people are beautiful and warm. It really is a great place. Yeah.
So what age were you when you left South Africa to come? Was it straight to Australia from there?
So funny story, okay. So in 2000, my father-in-law...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Immigrated to Canada. And I can tell you exactly where I stood. We're on top of a mountain, went up with a cable car, and he put his arm around me and said, "My boy, you need to get your wife, Angie, and we just had one child at the time. You need to get them out of here. South Africa's going to the dogs."
Yeah.
And that planted the seed. And then in 2004, I started messaging a friend here in Australia saying, "Look, I'm thinking of coming over." He put me in touch with Hot Air, the company I work for now. I've been with them for almost 20 years. Yeah. And and they said, "Come on over, and you're gonna have to redo all your commercial licenses. Nothing's recognized in this country, literally nothing." So I came over. I spent just over a month. Passed all my exams and flew up to Cairns. Got Angie to come over, my wife. We looked at it, and they said, "Yep, how'd you like to be a junior pilot for four years on a 457 visa?" And I was like, "Oh my God, that's amazing!" You know, when I got the initial offer, I remember. Again, it's those pivotal moments in your life where you know exactly where you stood and the atmosphere and everything. And remember getting this fax, for those of you who don't know what a fax is.
Yeah.
"We'd like to offer you a position starting as a junior pilot, 4 years. This is your pay rate. Da, 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 da. All you have to do is come to Australia." But you have to, there was a page and a half of things I had to get done.
Yep.
I didn't even worry about what that was. It was just, this is my
ability to
give my girls a brighter future.
Yeah.
And it took us 4 months from the time I said yes to landing in Sydney. Four suitcases, four of us, nothing.
Yep, nothing else.
A few thousand dollars in our pocket because I'd spent all our savings coming here and, and we're a young family. I mean, Angie and I were very young when we started our family. And, what an adventure. We were excited. It was just to Cairns.
That was straight to Cairns.
And I had no idea Australia had rainforests. Like when we first went there, like, "Oh my God, look at this place."
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And what a place to raise.
And kids. How long were you in Cairns for?
11 years.
11 years. So you'd know the area.
Oh, and you know, the only, I have a joke with the other pilots. The only consistency of flying in that place is the inconsistency of the weather patterns. It's always a challenge up there.
Coming off the tablelands.
Oh, man, the winds are their own microclimate.
Yeah.
Beautiful area up on the tablelands there.
Yeah.
So what made you move? So obviously from Cairns to Bud, is it?
Yes. No. So in 2007, that's when they opened the operation here. So it's been going a while. Yep. They offered me the job to come down here and start the operation as their ops manager. And I said, no. I'm racing mountain bikes, you know, sort of semi-professionally, I thought. You know, I was a sponsored rider in that. And I was like, I'm not leaving my mates and my cycling, some of the best riding up there.
Yep.
Even though the girl said, yes, we'd love to move down here. Anyway, 2016, they said, Jay, how'd you like to go down to the Gold Coast and actually fly on the Gold Coast? So we've had two other pilots who wanted to try that because it's challenging flying on the coast. And I said, I'm up for the challenge.
Yep.
Yeah, but you've got to fly with transponders, controlled airspace. It's a lot of work. I'm like, I'm keen. You know? And also my youngest daughter at that stage, she was a dancer, so she was going to go to one of the fancy performing arts schools on the coast. So everything worked out perfectly. And that's why I came down here, was to start that. And I did. I got the flights off the ground. I actually still hold the record for one of the longest flights on the coast.
Oh, right.
From Burleigh Heads, south of Burleigh Heads, near Coolangatta, all the way up to Jacob's Well, the whole coast.
Oh, wow. Balloon.
And how's this? On that day that I did it, I didn't know I had done it. I took a small balloon and I flew just my family.
Oh, wow.
Just us.
Oh, that's pretty special.
And it was an anniversary flight. It was, again, on the 23rd of April, and I'd been ballooning for like 20-odd years.
Yep.
And I was like, well, I just did the longest flight with the family. It was phenomenal. Yeah,
it's just
a little reminders every now and then that, yeah, you're good here.
Yeah.
So, nice. Yeah. So that's the longest flight. That was one of the questions I actually had in my head. So that's...
It was about...
How many Ks?
Almost 50 Ks.
50 Ks for people that don't know the land.
Yeah,
so.
Almost 50 Ks. I've done longer flights distance-wise and time-wise.
Yep.
But yeah, that flight was spectacular. Mm. Some of my most beautiful flights have actually been on the coast.
There was one, I don't know if it was 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, where it went out to sea.
30 years ago.
Was that 30 years ago? Yeah, so a long time ago. And it went out, and it was out a fair way.
Yeah.
And there was...
Drama
with that, but it ended coming. It did come back, or
I don't think it came back. I'm not too sure, but the guy took off from Ormo. Okay, so that's northern Gold Coast for those of you that don't know, and with westerly winds, like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah,
no instrumentation in those days. Yeah, let's just go. And yeah,
out he went.
Big blue paddock. Here we come.
Yeah. Stay on the green stuff.
Yeah,
not for me.
Oh, yeah,
but there's been some flights where I've taken off from, say, near Madruba and flown low over Kumbaba Lake, like a meter off the water, and you see stingrays and sharks, and you go in among, and then you pop up again, and you keep on going further down towards Jacob's Well. It's a beautiful
area.
What a job.
Mm. Oh, it's pretty specky. Yeah.
Look, every job has a sacrifice. Mine's early mornings.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, looking after a lot of people and being responsible for a lot of people.
Mm.
You know, as I said, I do a lot of training, but I've got such an amazing team around me.
Yep.
You know, everything starts at the top. If you've got a good leader at the top, it all trickles down.
Yeah.
You know, everyone that works in our company wants to be here.
Yeah.
And they love it. There's a lot of guys that don't have to work. They're pretty well off and they just do it because they love coming.
They love
it. This is ground crew.
Mm.
This is ground crew.
So for those ground crew, like we talked about prepping the balloon and going up, it takes about 45 minutes or so to get up. When you come down and land, the ground crew then, you know, you've got control of the balloon, but you've also need them to,
so
if the wind blows up, have they got to help with trying to secure it?
Yes. There's all different SOPs. Like we've got what we call our exposition, which is like our Bible. And you've got all the different SOPs in there, and everyone needs to be signed off on that. And there's, you know, training every 2 years. Anything quicker than 7.5 knots when you're coming into land, which is about, you know, 12, 13 kilometers an hour, the crew just stand back because it's fast enough to come down and let the basket tip over. And I brief for that. When I do the briefing in the morning, I go two types of landings. One is an upright landing like we are now. Second type, a little bit quicker, few bounces. Basket tips over. It's a lot of fun. I was just on the cusp this morning of having that. But my last flight, the one I did last Monday, man, I landed at 14.5 knots. It was fast. And it was fun. You know, everyone's giggling. Everyone's right down there. And you got this thick padding, you know, at the base of your, you know, at the base of the basket and right behind your back padding. So it's nice and comfortable.
Right. And so that means you're then skidding?
So not skidding, so you're coming down and what you want to do is just bring it in level and enough,
yeah,
just above the grass, and then you switch off all the pilot lights, your four burners, four pilot lights, all with their own fuel source.
Yeah.
So make sure nothing's lit up. And then you're yanking on this red liner. It's red for a reason, because when you pull on this rope, it opens the whole top of the balloon and lets all that air comes out. And you've got a few bounces and it tips over. And
so even in 14 kilometre an hour winds and you're coming in hot, you're not going to skid for hundreds of metres.
No. In the old days you did because the deflation systems weren't as complex. Right. You know, in South Africa, I've flown just about every different type of manufactured balloon you can get. And I've dragged. I did a flight once in South Africa. Got to tell you the story.
Yep.
We coming into land, just myself and my instructor. And I had to learn what it's like to be in strong winds. Like, the wind was so strong that the gum trees were shaking. And we probably came in and landed. I'm not kidding.
Is the balloon out of shape with those winds?
It can do. It can get kicked sideways and your basket's moving. It's pretty uncomfortable. Yep. Anyway, we're doing like, I'm sure we're doing like 50 k's an hour. And we dragged. We dragged and dragged and dragged. Yep. And when I get nervous, I giggle. I'm like, yee, yee. When we stopped, we tipped the basket over. And first of all, we were just covered in dust and sand. All you could see was my eyeballs and my teeth, apparently.
Yeah. Yep.
And the side of the basket was just ripped to shreds.
Oh.
Yeah. But that we dragged forever. And that's why when you're coming into land, you got to make sure what's further down.
Yeah, what's down. Right. What's downwind.
With all this, you know, are there power lines? Are there trees? Yep. Are there buildings? Mm. You know, all that type of stuff.
Because
so
obviously you need to leave that grace room for the balloon to then fall or land itself.
Yes, and deflate.
And deflate.
That's right, yeah.
Because it doesn't deflate straight on top of you.
Correct. Yeah. If it's very gentle and calm, then, you know, if you pull that red rope without someone pulling that rope, then obviously it would come down on top of you.
Yeah.
Where's the worst place you've landed?
There's quite a few.
There's a few. There must be one memorable that you went,
okay, so, no. Fuck. I actually thought, you know, and if there's any balloon pilots listening to this in the world, I actually thought this day, I was still early in my career, the same blue balloon, the one that was chased with a lion and the one that was over the lake, this particular flight, four people on board, were flying, and the wind was quite quick, so it took me from the center of the game park towards the resort. And I was getting a bit cocky. Mother Nature said, here's your wake-up call. So we're making a descent over this beautiful cricket pitch, big field. And while we're descending, I'm thinking, I said to my folks, doesn't get better than this. Look, we're coming down on the cricket pitch.
Yep.
A thunderstorm to the west had decided to unleash its fury.
Oh, okay.
And it hit us like, it hit us so hard that the balloon went out of shape. And obviously I'm burning because I'm getting pushed down at the same time. And I'm getting pushed back into the game park. As I'm descending, I'm going over a little power station. So you can imagine this. Yeah,
and a lot of volts.
Just a lot of volts. Just managed to get over that. And I'm looking at my fuel going, I actually don't have enough fuel. I'm going to run out of fuel soon. I'm going back into the game park. Where I'm heading over is all mountains, no access. So I remember going, I think I'm going to die today. Anyway, so I'm not telling my passengers this. I'm cool, calm, collected, junior pilot. And I said, folks, get into your landing position, get right down and crouch down. And I just said, would you want to land here? And I came down in some thick scrub and I dragged maybe 150 meters. I snapped trees like this. Just dragging, bouncing, dragging. And again, one of those pivotal moments where I knew I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. We landed on a track, obviously right over dust everywhere. The balloon landed on a piece of grass. No damage, nothing. As people were climbing out and giggling, it started to pour with rain. I was a mess. I went to the top of the balloon into a little sort of little crevice thing and I dropped to my knees and I started to cry.
Oh, wow.
I honestly thought that it was
that scary. Was it.
I thought I was going to kill people. That's when I realized, okay, Mother, you have to be on it.
Mm.
That was a big, and I've had other moments where I've gone, oh, this is not good.
Yeah, you know?
But
obviously, when you get those moments, you've got the experience and the backing to just adapt and overcome and just simply, right, it's like an instinct kicks in and
I do now.
You just know what to do.
Yeah. There's a funny story which happened here about 3 years ago. I was flying the very big balloon. Took off first. I had four other pilots. Took off from Helen Clark's Laravel. And four other pilots. So I'm flying and I said, guys, get up high, there's no change, and I'm going quicker and quicker, and I'm heading straight towards Jimboomba. And you got that waterworks, where's that, near Cedarvale, out there, there's one big park there. After that, we've got nowhere place to land.
Oh.
And we're coming in and I'm landing and I'm getting right down near the river, near the Logan River.
Yeah.
And I had the worst line and I'm like, I've got to land here, otherwise I got nowhere to go. Came in, bounced a few times, yanked on the red line, balloon tipped over, everyone's giggling, 100% fine. I was obviously pretty nervous, but it was a good safe landing. Next thing, helicopter starts flying over. Oh, what's this? And it looks like a rescue helicopter. Anyway, unbeknownst to me, I'd walked all the passengers about 750 meters back to the bus. So there was a guy in his canoe, okay, canoeing up the Logan River, having a nice merry old time on a Sunday. He saw the balloon come in and land really fast and hard. The balloon landed so that there were young saplings. There was just young saplings sticking up under the balloon. No damage. They were just soft, yep, gentle. But it looked like somebody was in the balloon. He went to the basket, saw no people, saw the balloon, thought those were people and dead bodies. He called 000.
Oh, my God.
Dude, the cops, I got, yeah, the whole bang shoot. Helicopter comes in, lands about 60 meters from me. Big chopper.
Oh,
I
no.
run across, like, guys, everything's fine. I've spoken to the cops. It's 100%. It was a safe, controlled, fast landing. There's nothing to worry about here. The guy that had reported it, he was at the basket having a bit of a panic attack. I said, however, the guy that reported it, he's in trouble. So they said, okay, let's go have a look at him. They airlifted him to hospital.
He was out for just a canoe, yeah, and thought there was dead people under,
yeah,
the balloon.
Yeah, he was a mess. When we got back down to the bus, he goes, don't go near there. There's people, dead bodies everywhere. I'm like, dude, what are you on about? I said, I flew the thing. I said, everything's fine. He goes, no, don't go near. And then
he calmed down.
But what it made me I always see the good side to everything is like, what can we learn from this? Oh, I love Australia.
Yeah.
000, balloons crashed. Dead people everywhere.
Yeah.
They were there within not even 15 minutes.
Yeah.
How good is that? How good is
that?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like phenomenal.
Wow.
And I shook the guy's hands. I said, guys, you guys are awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, and they had a good giggle and took him.
So, but when you walked back there and you looked at the balloon, did it look like people under there?
Nah.
It just...
Nah, you could see a few little... for me, it's normal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was quick.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. We came in fast. We came in pretty quick. Few bounces.
Oh, the poor bloke. Obviously
poor
just...
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, far out.
That was funny.
Wow. Really funny. Right, we're going to go for a piss break and we'll be back.
Today's episode is also brought to you by TC Coolers. If you're looking for something unique, some custom gear to make your business stand out or your man cave even better,
then TC Coolers has you covered. TC specializes in custom stubby coolers, air fresheners, drink coasters, trucker haps, and much, much more.
And if you've got an idea, Thomas will make it happen. From design to delivery, he will ensure pickup is quick with top-notch quality.
Whether it's for your business, branding, party favours, or just to add a personal touch to your space, then they can do it all. Visit TC Coolers on Facebook today and let's bring your vision to life. Right, eh? Where are we at to? We're talking about something. What were we talking about?
Yeah.
That was a good
beer. Are we talking about beer?
Yeah.
Two seconds ago? More beer.
So South Africa, have you got any more yarns you want to get off your chest before we move on?
Oh, there's plenty.
There would be.
I was just telling you about the story earlier of, you know, folks have seen this on YouTube, surely, when a cat sees cucumber and they just jump.
They freak out. Yeah.
So this particular day, I wasn't flying. I was ground crew for the pilot that actually taught me to fly. Anyway, so he lands in the game park. He's about 100 meters from me. 100 meters is a decent distance. The grass is long. Like, I'm not the tallest dude. And I'm like, something in my gut said, Jay, just be careful when you run across to go to the basket. Because he says, oh, Jay, we need you here. Wind's picking up. And I'm thinking, if there's something in the grass between the road here where I've stopped and the retrieve vehicle and there, you know, I put faith in him. He says, no, it looks all clear. No problem.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I'm running in the grass and I almost jumped onto a cheetah. Now, a cheetah is obviously still a decent sized feline.
Yeah.
Not a leopard. A leopard, I think I probably wouldn't be around. But anyway, this cheetah got such a fright.
Oh, it.
Both of us at the same time. This thing went, jumped in the air. I was flat on the ground. Shat myself.
Yeah.
It was. Mm. And again, your adrenaline, and I run to the basket. But that cat
It ran off the other way.
It ran off. It got the
biggest fright too. It was more scared of you than it was scared than you were scared of him or her.
Absolutely. Yeah. So do you carry like a cucumber when you go there? just chuck it out and just go,
I hold it up in front.
Imagine if that was just imagine if that was true, eh? Yeah. A big lioness coming, cucumber.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yep. Or a bit of catnip.
Yeah.
Send the catnip.
Refresh my memory.
Oh, catnip is like, it's like crack to cats. Like they just can't get enough of it. Like it's sort of, I'd just chuck a heap of that out. And
yeah, right.
Smell that.
Right. Yep. I thought you were talking about something else.
No. Like no.
Lead.
Oh,
put some to sleep.
That's a different type of catnip.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so there's been many encounters, you know. I've had, as I said, I've landed amongst a pride of lions. We've had to wait for the guys to move them off. A herd of elephant, young elephant bulls that kept on charging.
They'd be quite scary, actually. I reckon elephants scare me. So
yes. Well, they push trees over.
Right, they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. We got caught once in a. I took my wife and my kids. We went just for a little safari drive on our own. We obviously had access to the park, but we were driving an old Nissan Patrol. And it had starter issues. Anyway, so we're driving and we saw the herd of elephant come and switched the vehicle off, be quiet, you know. And then as I got closer, okay, I think I'm going to move off.
Click. No click, start.
Wouldn't start. So about 80 head of elephant came right past them. I mean, right past them, and they got that amazing sound that.
Like a stampede effect.
No, they're just slow. You hardly hear anything because it's gentle. But the only thing you hear is them talking to each other where they've got that deep rumble sound there. They're like,
right.
Have you heard them do that?
No, I haven't.
It comes from their belly. It is the most amazing sound.
I have not been around an elephant enough to hear that, no.
Yeah, and once they had moved through the whole herd, there was big ones, little ones, and they're right next to it, and all the girls are like this. Car starts, off you go. Oh. Well, it was obviously meant to be.
Yeah.
It was meant to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's an experience there just because the car didn't start.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So since you've left, have you been back?
Once.
So yourself? Or?
The only person left there is my mother-in-law. Love her to bits. She's a British national. She can leave whenever she wants. But she's set in her ways and she's in a gated community.
Yep.
So she's there. We went back in 2017 after the big floods came here, that cycling that came through. After a 13-year absence in South Africa, I noticed massive changes.
Yep.
Massive changes. I was actually quite heartbroken, to be honest.
Sad, isn't it?
It really. Cape Town, beautiful. It felt like I was in Europe, a different country. But the rest of it, you know, we went back to where I grew up. We went back to the game park. And when we landed in Johannesburg, I remember getting the car rental and the lady said, oh, would you like room insurance? I said, room insurance? I said, for what? I said, no thanks. When we drove to the game park, which was about 2.5 hour drive, I realized why the potholes were bigger than this table.
Right.
Some of them were half the size of a car. I'm like, dude, you need more than bloody rim insurance for that.
Yeah.
It's just gone down.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the rural areas, there's a few issues. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So we've just cracked an hour. So we might move on, not too far, because there's so much to talk about. With yourself, like we've just done an hour on ballooning, and there's still more questions that I've got going.
I think we're gonna have to definitely get back for a second one
in my head as well.
Yeah.
But I did send you a couple of questions.
Yes, you did.
So I might run through them. Yes. So first question I sent you was best advice you've been given.
Best advice: 23 years old, the guy that taught me to fly balloons. We went on our first away trip with balloons down to the coast. It was a 2-week adventure. We went to all different towns, and as I said, we just clicked. Lovely human being, love him to bits. And he said to me, because he was very successful, you know, in all sort of aspects of life, and he said, success, it's pretty simple. Just be happy. He says, if you're happy, everything else falls into place.
Mm-hmm.
Relationship, spirituality.
Yep.
If you're happy, just be happy first. And everything just falls. You'll find more evidence of being happy in every little bits of life.
Yep.
And I've maintained that all these years. Be happy. And there's actually two as well. If you didn't want.
Yeah, keep going. Keep going. Yeah, keep going.
Is don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's all small stuff.
Yep.
So the same guy, his name's Marty. Shout out. I'm going to share this once you guys air it.
Yeah, definitely.
He gave me a book in 2003, a book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. It's All Small Stuff by Richard Carlson. I still to this day read that same book. The pages are yellow, falling out. It's in pieces. And every day I read a paragraph. And it's little things like, live every day as if it was your last.
Yep.
Yep.
Look at strangers in their eyes and say hello.
Yep.
Choose being kind over being right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
100 years, brand new people. If it's not your turn to take up the rubbish, take it out. Tell three people today how much you love them.
Yep.
Like, I live by that little book. And I use all those little things that I have on my tool belt for life.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, don't sweat the small stuff. Because at the end of the day, you know what? We're not here for a long time.
Exactly.
We're here for a good time.
Yep. We say that a lot on the potty about, you know, it's free to be kind. It doesn't take any effort to be kind. Where the opposite, when you're, you know, the opposite of kind, I don't want to get too into it. It takes effort to be that type of negative person.
Well, it's egos, isn't it? It's egos. It's sort of you.
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, the other thing we say is you're dead for a long time.
That's
you know, right. You're dead for a long time. That's so while you're here and you're alive, enjoy the moment, enjoy everything that's around you and live life.
It's a habit though. You know, any habit, if you do something often enough, it becomes a habit, whether it's good or bad. So if you're constantly looking for potholes, you will find more and more evidence of potholes. And that includes bitching and planning and whatever and being the victim. But if you're constantly looking for the little beautiful miracles in life, you'll find them.
Oh, yeah. Because they actually are everywhere.
But it all starts here. And it starts with you, the person.
Yep.
And yes, there is ego. And ego is important to have. Yep. Everyone has an ego, but you need to keep it in check.
Yep.
And ego stands for etch God out, not from a biblical point of view, but it does, you know, your ego can really get in the way.
100%.
You need to be conscious of the decisions you make. You need to respond, not react.
Yep. No, that's good. That's good advice.
That's a whole other subject.
Exactly.
Love all that stuff.
Another couple of questions I've sent you. So, being the ballooning with subject is today.
Yes.
Who would you like to have on one of your flights to show them not only the country, the sights, the smells, and your experience that you give your passengers on your in your balloon? But is there somebody? It could be dead or alive. Doesn't matter. If you could turn the clock back and go Elvis Presley, like it doesn't need to be living.
I looked at that question that you sent, and there's a couple.
Yeah, go for it.
My Oma and Opa. So I was actually born and raised in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Germany for 7 years before moving to South Africa. I've lived in Spain for 2. I've lived in a few places around the world.
Yep.
But my Oma and Opa, they are... I grew up pretty rough upbringing, and I had to live with my grandparents. My mom couldn't keep us anymore. Single mom in Germany, not even German, you know, 3 kids. So I was with my grandparents. I love them.
Yep. They're
the most beautiful, warm. That's where I felt my most loved as a human being, was the time I spent with them.
Yeah, okay.
And I miss them dearly.
Yeah.
They were just beautiful human beings. So if I could go back and share it.
And take them on a flight with you.
Just to have them with me and share my passion and tell them that a lot of the person I am today, the man I am today, is because of the beautiful love they gave me as that little... That little German boy, you know? Who didn't have a mother and a father for a very long time. So
stop it, you're making me cry.
That's good, Jay.
Can actually see it in your eyes. It's and how good would that be to actually show someone that sort of brought you up and show them the things that you actually see every day?
Fantastic.
That's good. And the last one I've got, this is one I've never actually asked anyone, but time travel. Would you like to see the past, go back in the past, or would you like to go into the future? And for if you had to take one of those choices, you had to either go for an hour, for the next hour, you have to go in the past or you have to go in the future. Which one would you pick and why?
I'd go future. And I'll tell you why I won't go to the past first.
Yep.
It's happened already. We have enough evidence of the past, whether it be dinosaurs or, you know, 2,500 years ago when the Jews were still fighting the, you know, the Palestinians. I'd love to go to the future, like pretty far in the future, to see how we've evolved as human beings.
If it's still there.
Human doings. You know, very often, Angie, my wife and I, we joke. I said, you know, the only way for the world to really have a good reset is for another bloody ice age, you know. And history has always displayed how barbarian we are, you know. So I'd love to go to the future to see how beautiful things have become. Have we embraced IA to its, you know, its fullest? Are people still loving and caring? And have we gone to space? Like, have we traveled beyond? Like, I'm a bit
In Mars?
I'm a bit of a I love.
Yeah, you like looking
sci-fi.
Up.
I love sci-fi. Like,
are you one of those blokes like I am? Every fucking night I get home and I open the car door, and before I walk in the house, I'm looking up. Are you that type of person as well? You look up at the stars?
I look up all the time. In the morning, I look at the stars. I'm always looking up. And, you know, I see the satellites and I see the shooting stars and I see the Southern Cross and the Milky Way. And, you know, there's magic out there. People go, oh, there's no magic. And, like, you know, there's the moon that's orbiting around the Earth.
Yeah.
It has a gravitational force on this planet. Of course there's magic.
Yeah.
You know, it depends what, you know.
How you interpret that yourself.
Exactly, right. But
So future,
looking. I'd love to just have a glimpse to see how far we've come.
Mm.
You know, are we just lying in bed and using our brain and flying around? And there's movies about it. A lot of the movies that were made ages ago.
Yeah.
Now, it's real.
Yeah.
There's that one that was made in the 80s called Stupidfy, or which one I'm thinking of, where we turn into just stupid people because the technology that's and the shit that's around us turn us into lazy people. I can't remember what the movie's called. But it's something like that, yeah. And it's like we become lazy.
Yeah.
Some mornings when I actually walk out of my place in the morning, it could be naked, could go out there. We live in 5 acres.
You do what you want.
You hear voices and yeah, fucking balloon above me. There's a balloon there. Yeah. So I just like walk back in, make no eye contact, back inside. Yeah. Right out.
Where's your place?
Yeah.
I'll see you off air. So yeah, yeah. Mate, you would have been over it 100%.
Yeah.
Because our dogs hate the balloons.
Yeah.
Mm. They just go off at the balloons.
They're doing their job. You know, dogs, when the balloon's on the ground, no problem.
Yep.
The moment that basket takes off, all hell breaks loose. Yep. The dogs just want to catch that big ball in the sky.
Yeah.
And it's the funniest thing. Yeah.
What is, you would have seen some sights. Like flying over people's places and stuff like that.
Up in Cairns, the funniest thing, you're flying along and you're going, okay, I'm flying low over a prohibited zone. We're not allowed to land there because the landowner's nuts. And as I'm flying, I see the crop and I'm going, no way he doesn't want us to land there.
Yeah, that's not a tomato plant.
That's not a tomato
plant.
Yeah,
that's not tomato. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not.
That's some herbal tea going on down there. That's that's the Winnie Greens. Yeah.
Unbeknownst to people, so a hot air balloon, we have an exemption from the Civil Aviation Safety Authority that we can come as low as we need to help navigate for safe landing.
Yep.
So sometimes we have to come treetop height. Most other commercial all other commercial aircraft have to stay a minimum of 1,000 feet over a populous area.
Yep.
We can come right down.
Yep.
So yes, I've seen all sorts of things. Hilarious things in people's backyards. I've landed in some tarred areas. And generally, the feeling towards balloons is a very positive, happy one.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, definitely.
Even the whole atmosphere and the attitude towards balloonists in this area, now that I'm a local and I've been here for 9 years almost, is very positive.
Yeah.
You know? It's a beautiful people.
No doubt. Anywhere you live in Australia or in the world, you're going to have
the
people that are like, the Karens. Fuck, you can't land here and rah, rah, rah. It scares the fucking daffodils, you know, like that stupid excuses, whatever.
I've had some very interesting landowners. Very interesting. I've had some confrontations.
Yeah,
crazy. I've had a guy come out with a gun ready to shoot us. He actually shot at a balloon a month later, was arrested.
Yeah.
Shooting at a commercial aircraft. You're shooting at a commercial aircraft.
You wonder what's going on in people's lives and you're doing that sort of stuff.
But it's the internal issues. It's like road rage. It's got nothing to do with the incident. It's got everything to do with what is going on in your life.
100%.
So
they just think fucking aliens is going to come out and
I used to be that. When I grew up in South Africa, I was an angry young man. You know, if someone cut me off, I'd chase them. I've had
Barney does that yesterday, didn't you?
Yesterday,
no? Or this morning?
No.
I did Barney's
have some road raids the other day, but
it's
when
not worth it.
Someone merged on me when I was sort of doing lane splitting. That's another story for another day.
We're not allowed to do lane splitting in Australia. It's called lane filtering only at less than 35 kilometres an hour.
That's probably why they merged on me.
Yes.
mate, it has been an awesome episode. We've not even covered even close the sort of stuff that you wanted, but yeah.
Before we go, I did normally on our shows, just our shows, we normally do like a song of the week, right?
Yes.
I did text Jay. I'm like, it'd be nice to hear a song from you that resonates. And our terminology is fuck, when a song comes on the radio and your ears prick up and you go, fuck, I've got to turn that up. That's the sort of song that we want. And I asked you that question, and before you say anything, I'm just going to play a snippet of it. and we'll talk about it. If it's going to play. Oh, here we go, Barney. We're on that thing again. Here we go. And with all your magic, I disappear from view. And I can't get. So that's an awesome song by Coldplay. It's called Magic. So obviously, that's something special for you.
Yeah. So yep. I'm sure you guys have gotten to know me a little bit now, and you know, I was talking about Magic earlier, but I got goosebumps just even listening.
Yeah,
to
so do I.
It's really loud in the headphones, but it's not only to what my life is about, but also, you know, it's a shout out to my wife. We still carry on like high school kids. We've been together. We have been through so much.
Yep.
You know, being such young, I was 19, she was 17, you know, and we were gifted with a child that had medical issues, still has today, you know, so we were still kids ourselves, and we've been through so much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, life really threw us a lot of lemons, and we made lemon margaritas.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. You know? As soon as I heard the song, I'm like, yep, okay, this is about special. Your wife. Yeah, this is something special.
I love Coldplay. Just love it. There's a lot of meaning to their music.
Yep.
You know. But also depends what mood you're in. You know, sometimes I won't listen to that. It'll be something more beaty, you know.
Yep.
It just depends. But
yeah. Coldplay. But that's the one song, like I said, that's the one song that really strikes a chord with you, that it comes on the radio, and it might be just, like I said, you're driving out to the site where you're about to take off, and it just happens to play on the radio.
Yep.
You're just like, fuck this, I'm turning it up.
Good mood.
Yeah, this is going to be a good day. Awesome. Yeah, when a song like that comes on for you.
For sure.
Yep, so that's awesome. Well, Jay, thanks, mate, for coming in. It's been an absolute honor to have you on. Now we have got a special present,
a stubby cooler
for you. It's just not here because didn't organize it, but I'll get it to you very shortly. Tommy, if you listen to this, when are we going to drop this? Tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, anyway.
Tuesday.
TC Coolers. We heard his little ad there before. He's going to look after you with a stubby cooler. Awesome, that's going to have. Actually, I might even get Jay to pick his own photo off his.
Yeah, send it over and we'll
anyway. We'll sort that out.
We'll make it on the stubby cooler.
So yeah, it's been absolutely great to get it, you know, a Sunday afternoon again. I mean, it's awesome outside. Not even a breath of wind. It'd be phenomenal. Do you look out there like right now? There's no wind.
You know what? I take my dog for a walk twice a day, and in the afternoons I walk in a quiet area on the other side of town near the cemetery, and I'm going, I could be flying right now.
Like this is amazing. Yeah, like I mean. Realistically, in the afternoon, the winds can just pop up.
You can do afternoon flights.
Yeah. Well,
that was going to be my question, yes, actually. So it's not just a morning thing.
No, here we don't because it's too hot. But like places like Canberra, you can do afternoon flights.
Yeah.
And in places like France or Europe, you can fly all day, like the French Alps, because it's so cold and stable.
Instantly, I'm thinking Alice Springs in the desert, because in the afternoon, evening, it does drop temperature-wise. And, of course, you've got no geographical problems out there, as in like, housing estates or power lines or
the challenge is with afternoon flights, and this is my experience, I haven't done that many, but you're usually taking off in quicker winds and you're landing in slower winds.
Oh, did I say Alice Springs? I meant Ayers Rock, sorry.
Yeah. Oh,
same thing.
But, different eyebrows.
But it starts getting dark. If you miss a place, you know. I was crewing once for a guy who eventually missed plan D. And he was flying in the dark.
Oh, fucking hell. ABC's gone.
Yeah. And if I do come on again, I've got to tell you another.
Oh, mate, we're having you back on for sure, because there's more to. The time today is just gone really quickly.
We haven't touched on the adventure bikes.
Exactly. There's so much more that we want to talk about. But Yeah, like I just saw a breath of wind out there now with the trees rolling. But yeah, the afternoon flight would be also a different experience. But yeah, landing in the dark and then trying to pack up in the dark.
No, thanks.
Taking off in the dark. Yep, good. Because you know the light's coming.
You can be night rated. You get a night rating. That's why we don't take off before first light. Otherwise, you have to have a night rating.
Yeah.
Different qualification. You have to have special lights and CASA clearance.
Yeah.
Too much hard work.
Yep.
It already sounds like a lot of hard work.
Oh, there's a bit in it when you think it's just a balloon, but it's not just a balloon. There's so much more packing in behind it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's phenomenal. So, yeah, thank you very much, Jay, for coming on today. We'll have you back in the near future. I'm out of here. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
See you. Bye. Come on, let's go. I don't know what comes next, but I couldn't care less. I refuse to push.